Welcome to the Round 8 Supercoach Coach Podcast. My name's Marcus, and this week I'm joined by Dunny.
Hey, everyone.
And Faz. Welcome back to the show, mate.
G'day, boys. Good to be back.
It's been a little while, so why don't we start with you, mate, and how you went on the weekend?
Yeah, sure thing. So a score of 20-58 this week, so I think I've picked up Dunny's curse of scoring a bad score right as I'm about to come on the show. As we'll soon find out, Dunny's a bit of a curse breaker this week. So my ranking is currently at 10,291. So last week just did the one trade, did Scrimshaw down to Young from the Bulldogs. So I've got 200K in the bank, looking to do a few upgrades over the next few weeks. And I'm trying to target the ultra premium guys as my strategy at the moment. So that's why I did just kept some money in the bank. And hopefully it gives me enough to get up to those Lloyd and McRae types. But as we'll soon find out, I think the strategy this week, a lot of people are suggesting is the double down. So could be a whole lot of cash sitting in the bank for me. We might save Dunny for last, given his impressive results. Yeah. So Marcus, do you want to...
Sandwiched in the middle this week. Wasn't a spectacular week, but it wasn't a disaster. And I'll take that, especially in a round where some people saw disaster scores. Mark had a horror, and he's requested to be off this week. So you won't be hearing from him. Patrons either. You can be a bit pouty, Mark, when he has a poor score. I said it to his face, so don't worry, listeners. I'm being fair to him. at least the good news for my team is I've continued my sixth consecutive streak in terms of moving upwards in the overall ranking stakes, which is fantastic. So I moved up to 8,627 with my score of 20.78. We've got Zach Williams really starting to turn things around and prove his mettle. He's averaging 98.5 now. So the listeners that were worried about Williams, hopefully a bit of solace there. Brody Smith continues his good run with a 94. So there's some upsides there. Major downsides, probably Liberatore scoring 58 after recommended keeping him. Dunny, why don't you regale us of your championship weekend, mate, where you leapfrogged plenty of the competition? How'd you go?
Yeah, had a good week. Managed to avoid most of the carnage that happened last week, which was really good. So I ended up scoring a 21.39, which pushed me up nearly 5,000 spots in the rankings. I'm up to 8,734. And as we worked out off air beforehand, I think I'm 2 points in the overall total behind you now, Marcus.
Very close.
Closing in.
Neck to neck.
It is. But yeah, I had a good week. Dunkley finally scored for me with his 134. Tim Kelly, 120. I looped on field Parker's 71 and Dersma's 68 as well. So yeah, overall had a pretty good week. I did have danger, of course, but I think nearly all the competition have him. So that wasn't a massive issue unless you captained him last week. As Faz was saying before, I'm one of the ones who is actually considering the double downgrade this week. Obviously, it's going to depend a lot on who gets named. And I'm actually hoping a couple of guys don't get named. Might talk about that a bit later because if they don't get named, they don't drop in value and you can save them for a trade another week. So yeah, so overall been going pretty well the last couple of weeks, which is very different to my normal form about this time of the season.
Nice one, Dunny. Quick group update. The leader of our Supercoach Coach group is still Kimmy's The A Team, and Kim actually messaged us on Facebook. Congrats, Kim, for moving into 21st overall. That's awesome.
Nice.
In terms of our Patreon group, the top scorer for the week was George's team to Future for You, scoring 22.36, moving him into 4,000th. He unfortunately doesn't take the mantle of highest scoring round for the year so far, but still a great score nonetheless. And the overall leader of our Patreon group is still Christopher's team, the Sports Scientist, sitting at 350th. And with that, we'll get to some questions. So let's start off with talking about the rookies, which is basically the key topic for the week. A lot of people are considering, as we mentioned before, not trading in any premiums, especially if some of these rookies on the bubble continue to get named. So we'll start off with the question here from Luke Hicks from Facebook. With very little on the rookie horizon, is a double down trade the way to go this week, depending on team announcements? So let's do a quick temperature check. I'm assuming most people are looking at Answorth and Haitley as the two ins. If Answorth and Haitley are both named this week, Faz, will you be doing a double down?
don't think so. I'm quite concerned about Haitley's job security. I think he has proven already he's a fair jet when it comes to scoring, and I don't see any reason why that would slow down. Scores of 95 and 85 in his first two games. But I did heard Cameron talking, not about Haitley himself, he was talking about Isaac Cumming, who's another youngster that's in the team at the moment, and seemed to be quite proud of the fact that Cumming he's been in the system for 3 years now and only just really putting games together now, and saying it was good that he'd spent that apprenticeship time playing in the NIAFL, and that it was a good sign for the club that juniors couldn't just come straight into the senior team. And hearing that has me pretty worried, because both of Haitley's games, he's come in as the emergency. I don't think that Cameron's ideal team has Haitley in it. And in saying that, there's quite a few big names out of the team right now. Most of us are aware Whitfield missed last week. There's also Josh Kelly, and Delidio is a week or two away from coming back into the team. I think that all three of those guys could impact on Haitley's position security in the team. So all of that has me a bit concerned to sort of splash out the cash and spend 150K on Haitley.
Donny, what do you reckon, mate? If they're both named, will you be doing the double down?
Very much looking at doing a double down this week. I've got about 87 grand in the bank, but there's not a lot on the horizon at the moment, as Luke mentioned, and that's the real concern. I am very concerned, like Faz, with Haitley's job security, and I think another one of our listeners has asked a question about that a bit later on. But yeah, that's the real worry. Is he actually going to keep his spot? And with such a talented midfield, he's probably got the toughest job. If you think of someone like Sam Walsh, who's walked into a Carlton midfield where there wasn't a huge amount of A-grade talent, Haitley's got the opposite problem. There's just so much of it at the Giants. He's going to struggle to keep that spot. And Leon Cameron's comments, just a dagger for us super coaches looking to bring him in.
So that question was from Bridget Jolly on Facebook, saying that Haitley scored super well, but what about his job security? And you guys have talked about it already so far. I just wonder, with his scoring, he's averaging 90 so far.
Yeah.
And he looks like he has the skills to keep that up. If he scores another 90, he goes up 82K. And then if he gets another game on top of that and scores another 90, he goes up another 60K. So he could go up basically 140K, even if he only strings two games together, which is the equivalent of a rookie going from 110 to 250K, which is the bare minimum you'd accept. But if he can do that before their bye, which also fortunately is round 14, it's got to be pretty tempting. The other thing to consider is a lot of us are considering trading out some of the midfield rookies, and you don't want to be trading down if they're on field. So if bringing Haitley on allows for better on-field scoring, that's surely got to factor in to that as well. I played Hayes on field over Butters and Gibbons on the weekend. If I had Haitley, that's 40 points right there. So that's also another little factor to think about. Yeah, I don't know. I thought if he got named, he's almost a must-have with that sort of scoring potential, but maybe that's sort of the greedy eyes being turned on there.
I don't think you're far off the mark there, Marcus, to be honest. I think if he is named, I'll be very seriously looking at him. As you say, he's only got to put in two or three games before his bye to get that real good price growth. And we always talk about a trade being worth or 150 grand. So he's only got to get two more games to get that growth for us in theory. So we'd have to seriously consider it if he is named.
Yeah. The run for GWS is also pretty good until the bye. So Hawthorn, Carlton, Melbourne, Gold Coast, Adelaide, North, until the buys. And I think Geelong, West Coast and GWS have some of the top runs for the buys. So another thing to think about for rookies, especially, it helps playing for a winning team. But the call outs are fair. And Faz's point about him costing 150K is probably fair as well. If it was 110, you probably even wouldn't think twice, but the extra 40K, if it's affecting your ability to do the upgrade, is very, very legitimate. Now, how about Answorth? What do you reckon, Faz, with Answorth?
Quite like the look of Answorth. In particular, I guess the DPP flexibility. Most of us have Dersma locked away either in backline or midfield. The concern that I have, and going to be stealing your point here, I think, because you were the one that told me about it, Zach Bailey is a pretty highly rated kid at Brisbane. Was picked 15, played 15 career games, so I think they're pretty keen to keep getting games into him. And he was on the injury list last week as a test with a hamstring injury. I haven't seen this week's list yet, but I'd say that he's, if not coming back in this week, he'll be coming back in very soon.
Yeah.
They play somewhat different role, is that right?
Pretty much the exact same role, unfortunately, for Answorth. So Bailey plays as the rebounding defender. After he got injured, they put Nick Robertson in the side for 2 weeks and then dropped him for Answorth. So Answorth is pretty much in Bailey's spot. And if you will talk to most Brisbane supporters, they have Bailey coming straight back in. So the question really becomes, do they play Bailey and Answorth because Answorth is worth persisting with, or if they stick to their structures or don't find an alternate position for either of those blokes, then as good as Answorth looks, he'll still get dropped this week. And Answorth is like, he's still a first-year rookie. I think he was drafted as an overager, so he isn't 18, he's 19, and so he's that 1 year older, but he is still sort of first year in the AFL system. So I think he'll get games sooner rather than later, but whether he strings another one together today, this week is another question. If Bailey comes in and Answorth comes in, you'd think you've got to pick the bloke after a 69 and a 74. Similar profile to Jack Ross, like good inside and out, decent decision maker, gets a bit of the ball. Like I'd have no issues picking him at all. I was just super worried about picking him last week blind considering the threat of Bailey, and I think that's still a fair enough threat this week. But if Haitley and Answorth both get named, it's going to be pretty hard to pass those blokes up. Let's get down to the next question. This one's from Shannon Swan, one of our patrons. With true premiums being out of reach with a one up, one down approach, so if you're facing a low bank balance and you're looking at trading out rookies like Butters or Gibbons, you'll certainly be in this situation. Is it worth doing two downgrades for cash supply? So this might put us behind the upgrading eight ball, but it'll allow us to hit the true premiums. And so I guess this sort of complements the discussion that we're already having and potentially adds another reason to do the double down if you can't hit a true premium. What are your thoughts on that? Faz, you've got cash. So, Dunny, do you have cash? Are you in this situation?
I've got 80 grand, but I actually don't mind the idea of doing the double downgrade. And one of the ways that I like the idea of it is particularly if you're not sacrificing points on field. So if you're downgrading two guys that you're sitting on the bench anyway, you're not really losing anything. The only thing you're probably losing is maybe your backup cover may not be quite so good. But if you're not going to lose points on field, it's not as big an issue to do that double downgrade. But, yeah, it'll put you 1 week behind the cycle. But then you might find in a week further down the track you could actually do a double upgrade because you've got that cash in the bank. So, and you don't want to be just settling for, oh, gee, I can only afford this guy at, say, 480 or 520 when you really want the guy who's priced at 650. You know, you'll be hurting your team further down the track. So it's 1 week of pain for probably a lot more gain throughout the season.
Faz, thoughts?
I quite like this approach. As you mentioned, I just did the one downgrade last week, so I have a bit of cash sitting in the bank. But I think that rather than sort of taking a predefined formula and just trying to apply it every season and say, well, you know, we've hit round six now, so it's time to upgrade. The way that we upgrade is we do one down, we do one up. I think we have to be fairly malleable and look at what's actually in front of us. And this year we have seemingly a bit of a shortage of rookies that are generating the cash. And so I think that you need to think a bit outside the box and maybe apply a different strategy than we've used in previous years. The other factor, I think, in all of this is that I think the backline's a good example of this. There seem to be a big, you know, a collection of guys that are just that step above everybody else. So I'm thinking Lloyd, Whitfield, Laird, Sicily, and Luke Ryan potentially as well in that group.
And Hearn,
that's right. So all these guys sort of averaging, I think it's, you know, 105 plus. Laird might have.
I think even, yeah, 108 plus except for Laird, who's 99, but it's averaged that for the last two seasons. So, yeah.
Yeah, and Laird's the cheapest of those guys. It's sort of the 530 mark. The others, I think, are all sort of around 550 plus. And as you mentioned, you go a guy like Butters down to a bottom-priced rookie, you've only really generated 150K. You take even a, you know, Scrimshaw type that's 315, that's got you up to sort of the four, I think it's about, you know, 465 with that money. That's just not you still have, you know, almost 100,000 extra that you need to get yourself up to a Jake Lloyd or a, you know, Shannon Hearn. And I think that's what you want. I don't think you want to be making compromise decisions and picking the fringe premiums. I think that this year there just does seem to be that core group that are doing so much better than everybody else. If the only way that you can get them in is to maybe take a week off upgrading, I think that that's probably the way to go.
You certainly don't want to compromise the second half of your season by forcing upgrades, picking up more points through the upgrading cycle, but then suffering during the second half of the season. Having said that, in general, strategically, I do like trying to force the issue to continue upgrading each week, just because I'd rather take a risk on trading in a bloke that's, you know, at Westhoff's level, 380K. That may not be a premium, but if you hit it, like, you're continuing your upgrade cadence and it's only costing you 380K instead of the 500 mark. But that's a risk that you'll have to weigh up individually in terms of who are the cheap price options and do I trust them enough to take that risk. Just a reminder sort of to listeners that don't tune in all the time or are not across our strategy. The moment you get behind in your upgrade cycle, you're behind by one upgrade until everybody's finished upgrading their teams. So that normally takes until round 13 or round 14, because the team that continues upgrading every single week will just stay that one premium in front of you. So it doesn't sound like a lot, but being one premium ahead of you for, you know, let's say 8 rounds can equate to, you know, let's say the difference is between 70 and 100. That's still a fair few points, like 30 points by, you know, let's say eight more rounds. You're still talking 200 points that somebody will get by continuing that upgrade rhythm. So it is not something to discount, but I don't mind the idea of sort of double downgrading to look to double upgrade down the track. Fortunately, this week, there are also some attractive forward options that you could consider bargain options. And so maybe we'll get to some of those in terms of alternates. If you can't hit a true premium, maybe you can consider some of these cheap upgrade targets instead. All right, before we pivot off the trade-in targets for rookies, Faz, I know you've had a quick look at the rookies on the bubble. Do you want to just give us a quick snapshot of who else is there, just in case Answorth and Haitley don't come through, and we've got to consider some of the other bubble boys?
Jump in if I've missed anyone, but I think that the two main candidates that we're looking at are Larky, who plays at North Melbourne, and Corbett at Gold Coast. Both play sort of a key forward role, so not traditionally one that scores you a whole bunch of points. But I think that the key with both Larky and Corbett is not their scoring. It's the fact that they're available in the forward line, and that's about it. Because I've had a look, the guys that debuted in the week just gone, we had Declan Kelty from Melbourne, Jonathan Marsh at St Kilda, and Liam Stoker at Carlton. We've got a defender, and a midfielder there. So we're at least another week. You know, next week we're not going to have any forward options available again. And, you know, I guess we don't really know what's on the radar even further ahead. But I think that the fact that you could get either Larky or Corbett as your downgrade up forward is probably the most attractive thing about both of them. I was talking to a mate at work who's a North Melbourne supporter. He's a big rap on Larky. He's been in the system for 3 years now, so has put a bit of weight on his frame. I think that was the thing he was lacking in previous years. Kicked 3 in his first game this year, so he can hit the scoreboard. And I think what's happened is that most people would have been a bit surprised to see Zeeble playing up forward this year. I've been told that was because there was a hole in the side from Jared Waite's retirement. So having Larky in the team has allowed them to push Zeeble back into the midfield. And I think for structural reasons, they'll be pretty keen to continue that structure. So I think Larky's job security is pretty good. Corbett, I'm not as sold on, just because Sam Day is playing in the twos right now, which I was pretty surprised to learn that he couldn't get a gig at Gold Coast right now, being one of their foundation players. So for Corbett, I'm a bit worried that Sam Day will eventually force his way back into that team. Larky, on the other hand, I don't think there's a whole lot of competition in the twos at North right now. They're not looking like they're playing finals this year, so I think that they'll be happy to keep pushing games into their younger players. So I think Larky's not a bad bet if you've got a rookie that you're looking to downgrade in the forward line, given there's not a whole lot available in weeks to come. I think Larky might be a pretty decent option.
Yeah, I'm definitely preferring Larky to Corbett. Key position forward in Gold Coast doesn't sound great, although, I mean, you could argue that North don't look that much better this year anyway, but at least Larky scored 75 on debut, which, you know, at least shows some scoring potential there. There's Dylan Moore available as a Hawthorn forward. He last played in round 3, scored 74 on the weekend. He's another one to consider, but the fact that he couldn't string the games consecutively has definitely got to be of concern. And Hawthorn would be pretty upset after losing to Melbourne, so who knows what's going to happen team sheets-wise. The other one potentially is Darragh Joyce, who played his second game, I think played his first one at the start of the season.
Yeah, round one for his first game.
Yeah, scored 60. So, again, job security question marks, but a little bit more mature body Irish bloke that could potentially work out as a backline trade-in target. I mean, there's just not a lot of backline trade-in options. If you're stuck for and you have to downgrade and Answorth isn't getting named, then if he gets named again, you could consider Joyce. Any further thoughts on rookies, Dunny, before we go on?
No, I think we've covered all the points there. I agree with everything Faz mentioned there, and particularly what you said there, Marcus, on Josh Corbett. I just don't trust anyone at Gold Coast to hold their position or to score well.
Next question. This one's from James Stelter from Facebook, asking whether or not it's better to cut Scott and Setterfield types or Butters and Petrocelli types. And so I think to go with what we were saying about trying to maintain some rhythm with upgrading, even if you're double downgrading this week, you're hoping to generate enough momentum to leave yourself the option of double upgrading next week. And so, unfortunately, because we're in the upgrade cycle, Butters and Petrocelli look a lot more attractive as trade-out targets than Setterfield and Scott, who, in spite of not getting games at the moment, if they do, still have more potential to go up in price and deliver you a little bit more coin from your trade. So, I'd look at trading Butters and Petrocelli out ahead of Scott and Setterfield types.
Sorry, Marcus, just one thing in that one is if you look at those guys, remember that if they're not playing, they're not going to drop in value. But someone like Butters, who, if he is playing, is probably going to drop in value. So if people are wanting to play that break-even game, I always hold the guy who's not playing, just stash him on the bench, use him as a loophole, and trade out the guy who's going to drop dollars.
If you've got a lot of cash in bank like Faz does, that's where you might consider trading Scott and Setterfield, because you did a downgrade without an upgrade previously to buy yourself that buffer to potentially deal with an issue like that. But unless you're in that scenario, I wouldn't be looking at correctively trading one of those guys out. You'd think that Scott and Setterfield will get a game eventually. And if they don't, it's during the buys where you get three trades that you look at dealing with players like that. Next question, this one's from the captain, one of our patrons, asking whether or not Walsh has hit his max price and whether or not now is the right time to be trading him out. Very controversial, considering he may be the best number one drafted rookie we've seen in a very long time, and he's only lasted 7 rounds in our side so far. But his break-even is pretty high. It's 97. Thoughts on that, Faz?
Understand where the thinking is coming from. That, you know, we were speaking before the show that there's some very attractive upgrades you can do with Walsh at that price. I think you mentioned McRae. I don't have his price.
Yeah, 580. So
580. So there you go. You got 130,000, which is a...
You trade Butters out and...
Butters to a, you know, $120,000 rookie. That's got you enough there to turn Walsh into McRae, who, you know, not just a premium, he's an ultra premium. The issue, though, that I have with getting Walsh out of the team is how good at scoring he's been so far this year. And I'm not sure that I want to sacrifice those points on field just yet. And I know that in that scenario, we're going Walsh to McRae. So we are increasing our points. But if I think about it, that if I leave Walsh on the field and I get rid of, you know, a Collins from my team, who, you know, what did Collins score on the weekend? It was 47. So the trade I'm looking at this week is Collins to Laird. I'm pretty confident Laird's going to score about 100. Collins could keep scoring at this round about the 50 mark. So there's a 50-point increase in one trade there, whereas Walsh has been averaging 95. As good as McRae is, you know, maybe we put him down for 120, 125. That's only a 30-point increase from Walsh's scoring. So I can understand the attraction, but I'd rather leave Walsh as one of my last upgrades, keep that good scoring on field. If his scoring dropped away, then I can see there'd be a, you know, much more of a need to trade him, because his price would drop pretty quickly. But he scored an 89 on the weekend. I don't think there's any reason to suggest that his scoring's about to fall off a cliff. So I think that, yeah, I think that it's correct that he's probably hit about his max price, but I don't think that means that we need to, you know, jump off him straight away and get him out of our teams.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think if you keep Walsh, you're going to have an easy upgrade like down the track anyway. So it's just a matter of when you need to take that easy upgrade. If you think it's the most attractive to take that now because you cannot create any cash generation anywhere else, then that's fine. But I'd argue that, yeah, I'd trade even the Drew out before I trade Walsh out at 320. Let's move to a trade out candidate now. And this one, this question is from CJ James on Facebook. Why is Dunkley stealing all of Liver's points? So if you kept him the extra week, he scored 58, even though he had a high break even last week after a poor game. Surely, even though as much as you'd like to trade him out this week, you continue to hold him. Like if we're talking about holding Walsh at 450K, having averaged 95, Liver's price at 460K, and he's averaging 98 after 58 and like a 70. Like surely his average looks worse after these two poor scores. And he still started, I think, in 11 center bounce attendances on the weekend. So it's not like they've ripped him out root and stem from the midfield. I'm in the camp of sort of keeping Liver, but I know a lot of people probably wish they would have traded him last week. So I don't know if I'm sort of double downing on my mistake there. Dunny, what do you reckon?
Look, I'm not a Liver owner, which I'm pretty happy about. And I'm a Dunkley owner, so I was very happy with the change in roles that they had.
Yeah.
Look, I mean, Bevo, we know he's a risk and he likes to throw the magnets around on his whiteboard. I think sometimes he just throws them in the air and sees where they land. But I certainly understand what you're saying with Liver. If you've held him this long, his average is still not bad. He could have that role change back into the midfield again next week. Look, who knows? So there's certainly good arguments for and against trading him out. If I was an owner, I'd potentially give him another week, but I wouldn't be down on anyone who did trade him out. So I tend to try and hold my premiums. He's always, you've probably got him in thinking he was a stepping stone anyway. So if you've got enough cash to upgrade him, I can understand it, but I wouldn't be trading him down to a rookie.
All right, next question. This one's from Tommy Cregina, one of our patrons, asking which primo midfielder to grab out of Bont, McRae, and Lockie Neal. So if you're looking at the ultra premiums, Bont and McRae are actually 580K each, and Bont's only gone up 20K, which is actually peanuts considering he started pretty cheap and he's like top five averaging player for the season so far. Definitely looks like he is in great nick and great form at the moment. And McRae obviously dropped a fair bit of price and is an attractive trade-in option as well. Neal being the preeminent trade option with the highest average of the year so far. It's pretty hard to split. Why don't we go around and get a 1-2-3? Faz?
My concern with Bont, despite the scoring that he's shown so far, is that he's also pretty handy forward. And I can see him being pushed up the ground and having potentially a couple of quiet games just, you know, not from form, but more just a role change. So I'm a little bit concerned about Bont. My situation currently is that I have Liberatore, Walsh, and Constable's positions to upgrade. So I'm really looking to only bring in bona fide ultra premiums. I'm confident that McRae and Neal fit that category. I'm just a little bit uncertain about Bont and Pelly based on the move forward risk. So I probably have McRae at number one because of the value that he presents. If you were confident about Bont, I'd put him at number two just because he's 70 grand less than Neal. And I think that we can get a better price on Neal despite how insane his scoring is. But he's got a break even of 131 this week. He's got 108 on the weekend, so the 142 will cycle out next week. I think that we can get him hopefully sort of more at the low 600s rather than 650. So based on my assessment, I'd have one McRae, two Neal, three Bont, but I can see why Bont would be above Neal based on the value.
Donnie?
Yeah, for exactly those reasons that Faz just mentioned about Neal, I fully intend getting Lockie Neal into my side, but not just at the moment. When that 142 rolls out, depending on how he goes this week against the Dogs on Antarctica, I think they're playing this week, or is it Ballarat? I'm not sure which one. Wherever it is, it's going to be cold. Yeah, I think he's probably going to get cheaper in the next few weeks and I'm going to look to upgrade to him during the bye period. McRae would definitely be my number one there. He has a pure midfield role that doesn't change, whereas Bont does get thrown forward at times and that can hurt his scores. So much like Faz, I'd go McRae number one and it's probably, depending on need and how much you trust, whether you put Neal or Bont second, but just for the value, I think you've got to go Bont second in that one.
Yep. Third, Neil, because of value. I actually have Bont 1 and McRae 2. I think Bont has always threatened to break out, and this year certainly looks like the year. You want to be punting that Western Bulldogs can continue some form and threaten the top eight to be taking that risk, because Bont does have the risk of going forward. But we've seen midfield forwards dominate in the past, including Dangerfield and Martin. In a winning team, having moments up forward can actually help rather than hinder your scoring. And Bont's actually still starting a fair bit of time in the centre from the weekend's games. The centre bounce attendances read Bont and Dunkley at 16 each, beating McRae at 15 and then Libba next at 11. So Bont actually tied the most centre bounce attendances for the weekend. All right, next question. This one's from Scott Pantlin from Facebook, asking whether or not Westhoff is a trap. But he's thinking ruck cover tick, round 12 bye tick, role change tick. CJ was on the show last week, traded him in and is loving life. Faz, what do you reckon?
It's sort of hard to make too big of a mistake, I think, at that price. It's a bit of a free roll, really. I know just before you mentioned Drew as a potential trade out, so you can pay 60 grand to go from Drew up to Westhoff, and then you've got yourself, as Scott's mentioned, you've got some cover in the ruck, you've got a guy who has had premium scoring in the past, and you know, with that big score on the weekend, it's not like you're going to lose value, I don't think, on Westhoff. I think he's obviously better if you got him last week because he was even more of a bargain, but I don't think he's going to slip any lower in price. So if it turns out that he's scoring crap, then you've wasted a trade, but I don't think you're not going to lose money on the trade. And I think that I'm pretty confident he's going to score better than a rookie would for the next, you know, few weeks leading up to his bye. So pretty attractive option and actually one that I hadn't really considered before the show and am considering now.
Yeah, I really liked him last week, but it was hard to go past TK at 476. And seeing another round of scoring is definitely good. For me, the biggest call out is Marshall back in the side at Port Adelaide has changed his role, because they've now got another bloke who can be a forward option. Dunny, you're the Port Adelaide guru here, so why don't we get your thoughts on this, mate?
Exactly what you just said. With Marshall coming back into the side, it does free Westhoff up. He doesn't have to play that permanent forward role as much. So hopefully he does go back to that play anywhere around the field kind of role. Hopefully gets thrown onto a wing a bit as well. And if he does end up down back, he's a very good intercept marker, which we know is worth a lot of super coach points as well. Like Faz, I hadn't actually been considering him, but now looking at that price and a break even of 36, you're right, he can't really go wrong unless he has a danger-like game this week. His lowest score is 39, so he definitely still go up in value. So, but the other one is for those of us who made the trade out of Bynes to Riley O'Brien in the rucks, if you do bring Westhoff in into your forward line now, when you eventually trade out Riley O'Brien potentially back to Bynes, you've then opened up that forward ruck swing and you've got that backup ruckman in case a Grundy or Gorn goes down. So I quite like the trade and now I'm actually seriously considering doing it.
So to me, the main reason for selecting him is if you want ruck cover, there's really only one ruck forward option to go with this year, and that is Justin Westhoff. Like there's nobody close, but maybe Lobb as a ruck forward option who's averaging 83 for the year. Lysette's only averaging 82, and you'd think Westhoff will beat that on the run home. So, yeah, that's the other thing to consider. If you're worried that at some stage Gorn and Grundy might miss a game, then the only way to shore that up with a Bynes type is by bringing a Westhoff type. And so to bring him in at his low, or not quite as low because he's gone up 20K from last week, but that's certainly got to be a primary driver to bringing him in. So if you like ruck cover, that'd be a pretty good reason. Now, next question, this one's from at MTown Ballers, and he's asking about what we think about Jack Darling as a cash cow. Now, I am so jazzed for this trade, and nobody else seems to even be giving him a sniff. Like, he scored 4 goals and scored 132 points. His break-even's now 35. Like, he was priced at 471. Last year, he averaged, like, if you take out, I think he had like a score where he scored like zero or negative or something. Like he dominated last season. 322K, like how wrong can you go? cost less than Brody Smith to start the season. And, you know, he has a couple of big games. He'll spike up in cash. So I'm very, very heavily considering Jack Darling, but I'm a sucker for these sorts of selections. I also think that if you're struggling to upgrade, this is an opportunity to continue the upgrade cadence, but you're taking a risk on obviously the upgrade target. Am I crazy, gents?
Can I just ask about his score of 9 in round 5? Was that an injury there?
Or? Nope.
Nope. He played the whole game in round 5.
It was in the wet, though, wasn't it?
Was that the game against Port? I think it was. No, that game wasn't. Sorry, it was wet after half time, I think.
But it's probably still not an excuse for a 9.
No, I guess, Max, if we're looking at Jack Darling, I've got a bit of a golden rule in my team, and that is unless your name's Lance Franklin, I don't pick a key forward in my side. They are just way too up and down with their scoring from week to week. If I look at Darling this season, he's gone 75, 90, then 50, then 99, 22, 132. His variation or his standard deviation in pricing is just in scoring is just massive. For me, that's just too risky to pick up. I can see why you would do it at that price, but I just don't trust key forwards. What about you, Faz?
I'm in a pretty similar boat. I think Jez Cameron might be the one guy that might interrupt your golden rule there, Dunny. But I don't think Jack Darling really has shown enough to break through that rule, because I think it's a pretty sound one in most cases. As you said, they're just so erratic with their scoring. I feel like Darling is more the type that you'd be picking up later in the year when you're doing the luxury upgrades, and it's a guy that you can just play on the bench and loophole and see his score first. Yeah, I think that I'm just a little hesitant. I think was it Moosey last week saying that West Coast draw is really opening up from this point on? So I can definitely see the attraction, and the forward line is probably the one line where it's less clear who the top six guys are. But yeah, with all that said, I don't like guys who score 9. I've already got Noah Bolter in my team. I don't need another one.
All right, so let me tempt further. He last year averaged 87. He scored a 14 in round 11 where he rolled his ankle in the first quarter and didn't return. He scored -1 in round 22 where he got concussed and did not return. If you take that out, Darling last year averaged 97 in the games that he played. West Coast draw opens up, as I said, their next run until the buys, St Kilda, Melbourne, Adelaide, Western Bulldogs, Sydney. I get it's out there, but I don't think it's as crazy as some people might think. I thought he presented value based off the fact that he had two, basically one quarter games last year, and off of 322. Like, just we talked about Westhoff being hard to get wrong.
Yeah,
like,
it's hard to go wrong with Westhoff. So yeah, I got to apply the same reasoning with Darling.
Risky. But if you feel like rolling the dice out there, maybe. All right, let's finish up with overrated v. underrated. We've got a question here from Shannon Swan, one of our patrons, asking about a couple of PODs who have really stepped out from the pack this year. The first one, Faz, you've already referenced this show, Luke Ryan. Overrated or underrated, mate?
Well, he's averaged 108 so far this year, so that's some pretty impressive scoring he's put up. He's not a guy that I've ever really considered in Supercoach much before. But I think that as Shannon's mentioned, the point of difference nature of Ryan has to lead me to say that he's underrated because he's in so few teams. His price hasn't gotten out of control just yet. Is that right? Was he about 540?
540, less than Lloyd, less than Whitfield, less than, most of the...
He's sort of about a Laird price. I know Laird has got the history and has done this in multiple seasons before. So I think that if that was your choice between Laird and Ryan, I'd probably still lean towards Laird, but still presents a bit of value in very few teams and seems to have quite a high-scoring role there in Freo's backline. So I'm going to go with underrated there.
Yeah, I'll agree with you there, Faz. He's in 2.8% of teams at the minute. So as a point of difference, definitely a good pickup. He's someone that I did look at seriously for draft leagues this year. I didn't look at him for my classic side. But I agree, he's definitely playing a lot better than I thought he could and definitely underrated. He loves an intercept mark from what I've seen and is really driving a lot of their attack off of that half-back line. So I would have no issues if someone wanted to pick him up.
underrated just based on his selection stats and the fact that he averaged 90 last year. And we've always looked at him as a potential high scoring option, but lacked the consistency to take it through 22 rounds. So hopefully this year is the year for coaches that are deciding to pick him up. He's also the third tall defender. They've got two young defenders that are taking the number one and number two key posts. So relative to them, he's the free bloke to run in and fly at those balls, even though arguably he has the sort of size to play a key post if need be. So definitely a bit underrated. Now, the other one that Shannon asked about was Jezza Cameron from GWS in the forward line, also averaging 108. Also, always sort of seen the high scoring potential, but struggled to maintain it across 22 rounds, as is pretty natural for key position forwards. What do you reckon, gents?
So I'll take this one first. I think you're right. He's only really had one poor game this season, and that was in round two where he had a 68. But other than that, you know, he's there's 100, 163, 92, 85, 114, and a 134. You were right before, Faz, when you said that he does break my rule of not picking a key forward. But he doesn't seem to play as much like a key forward. He's a lot more mobile than, you know, someone like a Darling or a Josh Kennedy. So I, once again, he's another player I would seriously consider looking at in your side. He's in 5% of teams. I think that consistency has always been the concern over him, but he seems to have a bit of it this year. So I'm going to go with slightly underrated.
I guess the problem with Shannon's question, putting that as the underrated, overrated, is that we've gone for POD. So by definition, they're a little bit underrated. I would agree in the broad scheme of things that he is an underrated player. My concern, though, with Jez is that I think I heard somewhere over the weekend that after his 6 goals on the weekend, I think he's on track for 97, 98 goals this year, and that seems pretty difficult to sustain. Mm. So I don't think he presents a huge amount of value anymore. I guess a little bit. He's at 530, so he probably should be priced at, you know, 550 or so for the way he's scoring. But as I spoke about with Darling, I think that the key forwards have, you know, the great games, and then they can also have a few quiet ones as well. So Jez, I'm just a bit worried that he can't keep the scoring up. And truth be told, he probably doesn't have to still make it into your team. If he averages around 100, you'd probably still be happy. What with the limited options up forward this year? I'm still going to land on underrated, but mildly underrated, not so much as I had for Luke Ryan.
I think because of how well he's scoring, he's actually overrated for a trade-in target. Caleb Daniel cost less than him. Tim Kelly cost less than him. I think they're just blokes that I'd trade in over him, blokes that are under-selected relative to him as well, because, yeah, Daniel's not particularly highly selected either, being a little bit of a surprise packet this year. So as a trade-in target, slightly overrated. Now let's finish on a captaincy corner. We've already gone quite long on this show, so I'm going to rattle off a few and then give you gents the opportunity to pick your VC and C combination. So did some research this week. I've got the number one vice captaincy target potentially being Grundy. Cruiser didn't play last week with a sore adductor. If he doesn't play again this week, I definitely think I'd lock him in as the VC option. Plays on Saturday afternoon. And the other one that I like a fair bit is Bont, who's playing at the same time against Brisbane. His last two against them, 127 and 132, and in top form at the moment. That definitely is playing a part. Cripps, his last score against Collingwood last year was 187, which is massive. So with a little bit of criticism on how he played the following week, he's my sort of third sort of option. The one that's fourth could easily be the first, and that's McRae. His last three, 121, 162, and 156 against Brisbane. That's pretty hard to pass up, but it looks like he's not been scoring as well the last three, in the 90s and in the 100s, and that's why he's slipped backwards a bit in sort of my calculations. For a backup captaincy option, it will be hard to go past Fife, who scored 142 twice against Richmond in his last two outings against them, and Gorn should be a pretty reliable backup option as well, 148 and 112 his last two against Gold Coast. So my final word, I'll probably lock in Grundy into Fife if Grundy is coming up against Cruiser. Otherwise, potentially Cripps into Fife if Cruiser's back in. Gents, Faz, who will you be going with, mate?
Not much to add there. I've had a fair bit of success with the Rucks as my VCs this year, so I like Grundy as the option. Probably looking to swap to Cripps if Cruz is named. And, Fife looks a pretty solid backup there.
As a non-Fife owner, it's a little bit trickier for me. I'll be looking at Grundy for that VC into a very short turnaround and potentially having to make an early call. Thoughts on Gawn against Gold Coast?
Yeah, pretty good, mate. Like,
yeah,
I think Witts has proven to be a decent ruck in terms of negating opposition ruck scoring, but that doesn't seem to have affected Gawn in his last two outings against him. So, I like that.
And the only other option that I have is the guy I traded in last week, Shannon Hearn, against the Saints. I reckon he could do a fair bit of damage in that Eagles backline against St Kilda this week as well. But if I had Nate Fife, he would definitely be it because Richmond are giving up a heap of points to oppositions this year.
Awesome. Thank you very much, gents, for joining us. We're getting more and more to talk about because we're heading into upgrade season, so I appreciate your time. Best of luck for your trades this week. I think a lot of it will come down to team sheets, so it shall be interesting. And with that, we'll catch you all next week. See ya.
See everyone.
Bye.
I forgot to mention, actually, I should give a final call out. This is a weird one, but the bloke at my work, Alex Sanford, is coming first overall in Supercoach, so I thought I'd give him a shout out. I actually work for Coles in the head office, and it's bloody massive, so I don't know Alex personally, but I'm sure there are a couple out there at least listening to the podcast, so big shout-out to Alex. It was talk of the town in the gym today, so congrats to him. Hopefully he can keep it up.
Nice shout-out there. You get a little cut from the prize money.
Thanks, mate. All right, see you, gents. Don't want this, get crazy. Don't want this, get crazy. Hey, let's get crazy.